We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Goes back to the price you pay or the cost of, you know, what it takes to win. I think early in the season, we've had some blowout wins, which can make you think that will just continue, but it won't. The ACC, every game is difficult.
Coach Dawkins was the closest thing to my dad prior to him passing when I was young. He became Uncle Johnny. He's a huge reason in me coming to Duke, and he's been that father figure in my life forever, forever at this point. Just waiting for the buzzer.
I was
down.
Not, by the way.
I was there. I was ready. So if it would have went in.
I've never heard this before.
If it would have went in, I would have been crushed.
Oh, no.
Probably more than anybody, because I was already like, let's celebrate.
And welcome in. It's the Duke Basketball Podcast. David Schumate alongside associate head coach John Shire. Coach, how's it going?
It's going okay. Got to keep going here, but all good.
Of course, a little bit of a disappointment this week for the Blue Devils. The second loss of the season at Clemson. We're going to talk about that coming up. 15-2 now on the year and 5-1 atop the ACC standings, tied with Louisville. Fittingly enough, the Cardinals are next on deck, and we'll talk about that matchup before we get out of here. But a few weeks since we caught up, and, you know, so much to talk about. I mean, recency bias, we can get lost in the moment with Clemson, but let's talk about the start of ACC play overall and how the team has been doing. Just start with you, kind of general impressions, 30,000-foot view.
Well, we've obviously gone off to a really good start. You've seen different guys step up every game. We have to adjust to the injuries that we have with Wendell being out, you know, missed Joey Baker the last game. And so the evolution of our team, we can't stay the same. So I think that's what you saw, you know, in the Clemson game. We learned a lot about ourselves. And moving forward, the entire ACC slate, it's an evolution. And I think we're at the very early stages of who this team is. We have a lot to improve on. But I think the main thing that you've seen, for the most part, we've been very hungry. We've had some tough wins on the road. And our defense, for the most part, has been there. And, you know, wasn't there completely against Clemson. But we need to continue to have that be our identity.
We got a lot coming up for you guys. Nolan Smith, the director of basketball operations, is going to join us in a little bit, talk about his new role, his playing days, play a little trivia before we wrap this one up. But I want to start what you just talked about with the defense. A 9-game winning streak before the loss to Clemson, and the last 7 of those wins, the opponent did not reach 65 points against Clemson, 79 points for the Tigers. From your perspective, how much of that, you know, Clemson's been playing really well of late. That kind of gets lost when people are looking at different things. And what, you know, Sims was able to do in that game was very impressive. And also one of their transfers in Mack, those two combining for 47, they were a problem all evening long. And how much of that was, you know, some stuff that you kind of touched on that Duke needs to clean up?
Well, give them credit, first of all. They were ready to play. It's a different kind of team because a lot of the teams that we face, usually the scoring comes from the point guard, the shooting guard, you know, guard play. And, you know, with Clemson, you know, going into the game, we said their two most dangerous scorers were their five and their four, and both of them can really shoot. So it was a different kind of game plan because of that. And so I think you could see right away we did not have the energy, the pressure on the ball that we normally have at all positions. And that's something, you know, we've talked about Shumate a lot, the price you pay for winning. You know, it's the price you pay is not easy. Every game's the same. Every game you have to come out that way. Otherwise, like you saw against Clemson, we were knocked back. And so I think, you know, less about X and O's and strategy. It was about our mentality coming out right away. And again, it goes back to the price you pay or the cost of, you know, what it takes to win. I think early in the season, we've had some blowout wins, which can make you think that will just continue or that will happen, but it won't. The ACC, every game is difficult. And even in those games, when we ended up winning by a lot, we came out ready. You have to come out ready to go right away. And I think that's a lesson to be learned here. Again, I could talk about it all day long, the price you pay to win. But hard games on the road, winning on the road is more difficult. And there's the mental preparation. So the thing that people don't see is behind the scenes, the practices, the travel, you know, we just started school. Those are the things, it takes a toll on you. I mean, we've played four road games in the ACC. It's difficult with flying back and forth and you're in a hotel and all those things. And so I think the mental preparation for a young player, we need to continue to learn about it, figure it out, and get better with that.
And also,
as a team, by the way, I'm saying as a team overall, we need to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a piece of that, and as we said, you can kind of be a prisoner of the moment. The team is 15-2 and 5-1 in the ACC. And of course, building that resume as you guys work towards the NCAA tournament. But we've talked about this a ton of times before. It's early January. This isn't when you want to peak. You want to peak in March. How do you thread that needle of there are obviously lessons to be learned from what happened at Clemson, but also you don't want to get stuck in that moment, just like you don't want to get stuck in a moment when you have a big win.
Right. Well, we need to take this and get better. You know, that's what we've talked about as a coaching staff. Obviously, you know, you focus on the next task at hand, which is, you know, Louisville at home, which will be an exciting game. But it's how can we get better? Like, we're not good enough. If this is March, we're not where we want to be as a team. And so we have to learn from these losses, just like, you know, last game we played Wake Forest, we talked about things we could do better in that game. And so as long as we're getting better, and then obviously in the meantime, we want to win. Don't get like that's obviously a priority as well to win these games. But that's where our focus is going to be. You know, defensively, you know, one of the things you've seen us do over these, you know, 17 games and 5-1 in conference, these first five games, is we've worn people down with our pressure, with our contesting. And with Wendell and Joey out, it's adjusted the way we've been trying to play. And so we need to figure out how we can get back to that without having those guys. And, you know, we'll see. Hopefully Joey's ready for Saturday. We don't know yet. But that's something we have to figure out.
That's kind of the next thing I wanted to get to with those guys being hurt. Appreciate the update on Joey. Hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. And Wendell still has that kind of brace or whatever you want to call it on his right hand. Going to be working his way back here hopefully in the next few weeks. But that is an adjustment, and not only for the players, but for the coaching staff as well, I would think, because you guys were playing a certain way and designing things, counting on having 10 guys that can go out there, and stylistically, I imagine you have to tweak it a little bit now.
Yeah, well, you saw in the Clemson game, we did have to, and it's the season started. It wasn't a plan that we necessarily had. It just happened because it fit our team, and guys were stepping up, and it was one game. Somebody might not have played as well, but somebody else would step up. And now you don't have the luxury of having extra players to step up if someone isn't playing as well. So we need everyone to come ready to play. We need everybody. Coach has been saying it all year. and we don't have that margin of error that we necessarily had with Joey and Wendell in the lineup.
I do want to talk about the progression of a couple of guys. I want to focus on the older guys now before we get into our conversation with Nolan Smith. I get to go to practice a lot, and I see you do a lot of individual work with Trey Jones. And to me, the shooting numbers are staggering. When you look at last year, he was 27 of 103 from distance, 26%. Already this year, he's made 23s, 20 of 56, better than 35% from three. He's hit some clutch threes, including really in that game against Clemson, but also on down the line. Actually started last year in the NCAA tournament against Virginia Tech when he came up with the big performance. His offensive game has really gone to a new level this year, particularly his shooting. What have you seen from that young man? What's been the difference?
Well, I credit his work. You know, he's works his tail off. Often he's the last guy at practice working on his shooting. And, you know, he's had to adjust his game a little bit because he's always in attack mode wanting to attack the rim. He's done a really good job of taking the right shots and just taking his threes when it's there, not overthinking with it, and just following his instincts. But I credit his work. Really every day he's been consistent with how he's attacked his shooting. And I've been lucky to be there with him, and you know, we do lots of drills and try to make it competitive for him. You know, when you just shoot, it's not the same as when you put a number on it for him. He really loves that, where it can get competitive, and so that's something we try to do. But I credit all his work on that.
He's averaging 31 minutes a game in league play. Is a piece of that the fact that Jordan Goldwire is averaging 30 minutes a game, and what Jordan Goldwire can bring defensively to be able to handle the primary ball handler? I imagine that can keep Trey Jones's legs a little more fresh for the offensive end to be able to have a defender you can switch in like that.
Yeah, well, both those guys, there's really no let up. And so, you know, the thing we found the last few games is now teams need multiple ball handlers against us. And so both those guys get in on the ball, makes it very difficult to start the offense. And so that's been a great 1-2 punch defensively for us. And I'll say, you know, in the Clemson game, we showed a lot of fight in that second half. You know, we put on the press got us back in the game. We put some pressure on them. You know, and our guard play, you know, and then Vernon inside, Jack White came up with some big plays. We really fought down the stretch. And so, but I credit Goldwire and Trey with that fight, especially on the defensive end. They caused havoc.
And I know here in conference play, coaches were very pleased with the play of Javon Delorier. Statistically, it's never going to jump out in that respect. But the looks he gives you, and also kind of the different body type inside than Vernon Carey Jr., imagines a different wrinkle for the defense to have to work with.
Yeah, it is. And Jav is going to do a lot of things that doesn't show up in the box score. But, you know, the way he runs the floor, his activity on the glass, keeping plays alive, and then his ball screen defense, really for the most part, has been, you know, textbook. It's been really, really good. And so that's something we need Jav to even take to a higher level. When he's right, he's adding in his finishes and a little bit of a scoring punch as well. But the things he does outside of just statistically is huge for our team.
And as we said, you can't be a prisoner to the moment. Yes, it was a difficult loss at Clemson, but the team is still 5-1, tied for first in the ACC and sitting at 15-2, one of the top teams in the country. We're going to talk about the matchup with Louisville, get our three-point shot up coming up in a little bit. But first, a conversation with the People's Champ. Well, as we said, all season long, we welcome in different folks from around the program, and today it's Nolan Smith, Director of Basketball Operations, and I feel like, you know, we're diving into different parts of the program, Coach Shire, but Nolan touches all of them. I mean, every single area. It's kind of hard to put in a bucket what he does.
No, it really is. Obviously, Nolan gives a unique perspective, one with his playing career in college and professionally, but as a coach and from a former player perspective. But I think, you know, most recently you saw that with our uniforms, and I know you probably want to bring that up, Shumate, but, you know, if Nolan, you could talk about what we've done with the uniforms. It's been a year-long process. Actually, it's been a few years, but mm-hmm. If you could talk about that, I think, people are amazed with how it came out, and if you could explain what went into it, that'd be great.
Yeah, so, like you said, it was a long process. It started really 2 years ago when myself and Dave Bradley sat down, and obviously, Dave is our creative genius around here with our creative content, our social media team. And, you know, we just started thinking about our uniforms, and we just started thinking about, you know, a change in our uniforms. And first thing was our traditional home and away uniforms. And we loved our uniforms back in 2010 and down the side with the color, bringing the color back in the side. And then we thought about, you know, some special uniforms, one being for Coach K and then one being for the Brotherhood. And we just really, it was fun. It was like a long day of printing out NBA jerseys, baseball jerseys, hockey jerseys, looking up Coach K, West Point pictures, and then Duke University. We looked at different brands, different logos, and then we ended up putting it all together and coming up with the Coach K uniform and then the Brotherhood. But, you know, the Brotherhood jersey was obviously the most special one for me, obviously, and it was something for you, Coach Shire, and for our program that has such great history and tradition of so many great players that we were like, this has to be done. And when we came up with the colorways for it and the Brotherhood logo on the shorts, it was just, it all came together so nicely. And Nike, obviously, you know, as our main sponsor, and they take great care of us, so it came together nice.
You touched on this briefly, kind of what you and Dave Bradley do on the branding side of things and the social media side of things, and I was thinking about this. If folks haven't seen, I'm sure everyone has by this point, the video that you guys created to roll it out, mm-hmm. With all the different guys across the country. And, you know, we talk a lot about the Brotherhood here, and rightfully so, but in the era of social media, where guys have so much access to stay in touch, it's not just a phone call anymore, it's not just a text like 10, 15 years ago. How much closer knit is the group going back generations, but because of social media and the ease of staying in touch with the program?
Social media is definitely a connector. I mean, we asked how many guys are on social media in different generations. There's a lot of guys now that played in the 80s, 90s that are on Instagram. You see Grant Hill's very active on Instagram. And we say, hey, we want to do an Instagram video. They're like, cool. You know, my daughter's going to see that. She's gonna give me some cool points when they see me on Duke MVB's page. So everybody loves social media nowadays. And obviously, our team does an amazing job of putting out content. And that video just, it summed up the Brotherhood. And Jay Billis, you know, who obviously is the voice of Duke basketball now. I mean, he's ESPN. He does a great, amazing job with ESPN, and for him to be the voiceover guy for that, the things that he was saying about our program, about the Brotherhood, about the guys that have worn the jersey, was the Brotherhood in a nutshell.
Well, I also think it's Duke MBB has turned into a way for our guys, our former players, to be connected to our program. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I can't tell you the amount of guys that reached out from that video. By the way, I think Nolan's going to be nominated for an Academy Award for that performance, by the way. So don't you think he deserves it?
It was really good.
No, in all seriousness, it was incredible. But then when you get, you know.
Is that what your phone's like, by the way, when you rock around campus, just one after the other, people hitting you, all the different guys?
That's basically what it is. That was actually my phone.
Exactly.
That we were getting. But it's incredible.
That's obviously one of the more visible things that you do with the branding and everything. But I think it'd be cool for folks to kind of just feel a day in the life of director of basketball operations, because you're pulled in so many different directions, whether it be, you know, helping former guys with tickets, or celebrity calls up and says, hey, I'd like to come to the game. You got to figure out the logistics with that. And then also travel, everything goes into a coach. So give us like a snapshot, a day in the life. I know every day is not the same.
Yeah, so not to go for an hour about it, because I think you definitely could go for a long time. But my job is to make sure life is smooth around here for the head coach and for the assistant coaches. And that entails talking and dealing with every single person here, you know, on a daily basis, from our facilities team to our equipment manager, Cedric Powell, to our caterers and our team meals, to our players, to our academic advisor, to our trainers, and just to make sure everybody's on the same page when it comes to scheduling our guys and make sure our guys are taken care of. With gear, make sure they have the right proper uniform, equipment, shoes, socks, everything from that nature, and then make sure the itinerary and schedule reaches every single person that is involved with our program, make sure they have it, and if they don't have it, that's on me, and I'm going to get text, hey, where's the schedule? And I'm not perfect. I know I get that sometimes, but that's the job, and make sure everybody knows what Duke men's basketball is doing on a daily basis. When it comes to road, it's dealing with the opposing team's director of basketball operations and getting shoot-arounds, making sure we have enough chairs, making sure Gatorade towels are set up in our locker room for our managers to do their job properly, to when we go on the road, everything as smooth as possible. That's pretty much it. So it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is.
No, you've been back though since 2016. Last year was the first year in the role, and I look back, you know, as we'll get into the playing stuff here in just a little bit, but you were an ACC Player of the Year. Last year was Zion Williamson, obviously the ACC and the National Player of the Year. We talk a lot about the impact different guys have on the guys as they're coming through. obviously, Shire and those guys handle things from the coaching perspective. But did you have conversations with Zion and RJ and stuff about what to expect? Is people forget, you know, these are kids, they're freshmen, they're going through this for the first time. You live what it's like to be on a Duke team that won a national championship, but also when you're the frontline guy and you're having to do it on a night in and night out, psychologically, I would think it could take a toll. Did you talk with those guys about it?
I think absolutely. I mean, I think that's the beauty of our whole basketball staff and coaches of being former players. I think we all get the benefit to our players and speaking to them from experience and speaking to them of what it's like to wear the Duke jersey and deal with the pressures and going out there every single night and having to perform at a very high level. So a cool thing for me that I got to experience with those two guys was barbershop talks. We used to always get our haircuts at 8, 9 o'clock at night at our barbershop here in Durham, and we would talk and just talk about plays, talk about NBA games, and talk about the pressures of, you know, going out and every single game, whatever it was, Syracuse, Carolina, whatever that next big game was, we were able to talk about that stuff and discuss it and just make sure those guys were ready. But it was casual, fun, lighthearted conversations, and I think they went a long way for those guys.
One of the things that I think is really unique when you look at Nolan's career, and I'm in the same boat to a certain extent with him, but I think, like, Nolan's freshman year, my sophomore year, when we played together, we were on the blue team every day. You know, mm-hmm. we were the team that was the scout team trying to give the white team buckets, and, mm-hmm. you know, we had to earn our way and figure it out. So we've come off the bench. We've been, you know, obviously key players, best players down the line. And so I think, like, for Nolan, he's able to – I remember when I first started with Coach, he always said, it's not about what you know, it's about what you can relay to the players, what they know. And so Nolan's – his ability to relate really to anybody, because he's been in so many different situations, playing, coming off the bench, like I said, starting, you know, and coming through in the biggest games possible. So I think in Zion and RJ, being able to relate to them, but also being relate to a guy who's – struggling to find minutes, and how do you go about that? I think that's something, mm-hmm. you know, through our playing days, like, we're able to connect in that in any situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we talk about coming through in the biggest moments possible. Let's talk about that national championship run in 2010. The Elite Eight at that time was a personal best, 29 points in the win over Baylor. We're sitting here in the media room in Cameron Indoor Stadium. I can't help but look at this iconic photo of you guys, I'm assuming, watching One Shining Moment with Coach K. In between the two of you guys, what do you remember about that run? What sort of things popped and stood out?
You want to go first?
Yeah. We can go back and forth on this. Because it's fun. We get to talk about this.
By the way, we were just talking. It's crazy. It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 10 years.
It's hard to believe we're
yeah.
that old.
That's where you're going to go.
We're definitely that old now. But the best part about that 2010 team was the fact, and I've been thinking about it more because we are in the 10-year anniversary. So as the year goes on, I'm sure we'll think more about it. We have some friends coming to town here soon. That's going to be very exciting. But everybody on that team was about winning. That's the one thing I loved about our 2010 team. And, like, we all wanted to go to the NBA. We all had the same dreams and aspirations. But for some reason, I didn't know it. I didn't know what he was thinking about as far as the NBA. It's his senior year. I never could tell that he was thinking about life after Duke. Not one day. And that was the beautiful thing about our team. And it was genuine. It was real. And that's why we were able to accomplish what we accomplished.
That's what I think, too. You know, I think people, it's everybody wants to win, but the sacrifice that goes into winning is something that not a lot of teams get. And we were fortunate that every guy in that team, it was about the team, the sacrifice, the toughness. It wasn't about points. It wasn't about individual awards. It was literally doing anything we could to win. And, mm-hmm. you know, people mm-hmm. like to look at talent. People like to look at how many draft picks did that team have, or NBA players, or this and that. But the heart that team had, and the sacrifice we made for each other, mm-hmm. every day in practice you would see it. And then I think it showed in the games as well. Is yep. to me what I'll always remember about that team, and what's so unique about that 2010 team for me. That's what I look back
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. And just to go more off of that, it was his senior year. Coach Shire's senior year, and if he wanted to, he could have averaged 23, 24 points a game in his senior year. But because he was so unselfish and selfless, we all averaged about 17 points a game. That was winning basketball. But he could have averaged 23 if he wanted to. He could have been ACC Player of the Year if he wanted to. Gravis Vasquez got it. He wouldn't have had my vote. Just saying. Love you, GV. But he did whatever it took to win. And we won ACC regular season and tournament that year and became national championship. So I don't think you regret anything about that about that year. You know, but
even though I have to listen to Carwell and, you know, Nolan rubbing in my face all the time about being ACC Player of the Year, I won't know. But I think for me, Shoemate, the unselfishness and the passing, like when you go back and watch that our 2010 team, it's some incredibly unselfish and fun basketball on the offensive end, and then incredibly tough, hard-nosed defense on the other end. Mm-hmm. And that was really special to be a part of.
Talk about hard-nosed defense. Do you guys remember what was going through your minds as that half-court shot's up in the air?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I do. I remember that play like it was yesterday. Nolan was the closest one to Hayward, and I was in front of the play. I was closer to the end where Hayward took the shot, and there was a shooter in the right corner. So I couldn't leave, and I just remember seeing the ball go in the air, and I knew it was right on line. As I turned, I thought in the last second it was right off line. I did not think it was going in, but obviously when he missed, I started jumping for joy, and the rest was history.
Yeah. No, I'd say obviously the shot was close, but I didn't think it had a chance, only because I thought the game was already over. You know, we got the stop before when Kyle played the great defense on Hayward to force that tough shot.
Zubek, that was a shot.
Zubek coming over.
That was the one.
That was the one. And when we got that stop, Zubek got the rebound. He gets fouled. At that point, I'm like, it's over. No matter what they get up, it's over. And he makes the first free throw. Coach yells, Zubek miss it. Zubek misses it. And obviously Kyle gets hammered. But it's still a half-court shot. So I was already, like, jumping around, just waiting for the buzzer to sound.
I was not, by the way.
I was there. I was ready. So if it would have went in.
I've never heard this before.
If it would have went in, I would have been crushed.
Oh, no.
Probably more than anybody, because I was already like, let's celebrate.
You knew.
I knew. So I felt good as it was going up, but it did look good.
So, you know, I don't know if I'm allowed to go off topic here, but you asked about moments that we remember. And for me, it was playing Baylor. And it was an incredibly talented team. We were down four with a few minutes to go. And to me, those were the most crucial stops of the season. Obviously, everyone remembers the last, you know, Hayward shot. But getting those stops down the stretch, Nolan hit some clutch threes, and then high-fiving some clutch, high-fiving coach on the way back with I'll never forget. And Lance Thomas had the, you know, tip dunk to kind of put it away. But I think that moment was, once we got past Baylor, made it to the Final Four, I think we all felt like we were going to win this thing.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be.
Absolutely.
Thinking about NCAA moments, certainly not on the same level, but last year, the game against UCF, and I think a lot of the media coverage and a lot of our coverage kind of centered around Coach's relationship with Coach Dawkins. But I want to get your feel. What was that like for you? I mean, everyone kind of knows the backstory of the role he played in your life. And, of course, his son was out there, and you're so tight with their family.
Yeah.
I imagine that was tricky for you, too.
Yeah. No, it was definitely tricky. Whenever you play against family, and the Dawkins family, to me, is family. Coach Dawkins was the closest thing to my dad prior to him passing when I was young. And he became Uncle Johnny. He's a huge reason in me coming to Duke. And he's been that father figure in my life forever at this point. And to go up against him, and, you know, during fall break, actually that season, I went down and watched their team practice.
Oh,
so
really?
It was crazy to be seeing them in person or playing against them. And, you know, it was emotional, just like it was emotional for Coach. It was emotional for me. And obviously we're on the winning end, but at the end of that game, it was just like, dang, because you saw Coach Johnny's emotions with his team. And it was tough, you know. Obviously, happy for our guys that we were moving on, but it was one of them games and moments in the NCAA tournament. You're like, man, we really have to play them. Like, does this really have to happen? But it does. That's the game of basketball, and You know, we get to talk about it now at the next barbecue.
I mean, I'll never forget sitting across and looking, and obviously everyone's happy because moving on, stuff like that. But you guys as a staff, emotionally spent was the description for me, more so than elated. It just looked like everyone was totally drained. And, and as you said, it almost switched immediately to feeling for Johnny.
Yeah.
No, it did. It's a game where you wish you didn't have to play, but you all your focus goes into treating it like any other game. But when it ended, there was a weird feeling of feeling it for both teams, like Nolan said. It just, especially because they played their hearts out. I mean, they played. The game plan they had was incredible. They played tough. They were really good. And then to see on top of it what Johnny's son Aubrey did during that game, it was like when we were here, Aubrey was 3 feet tall and you know wasn't playing yet. But I think like when I look back at Nolan and Coach Dawkins, I remember, you know, my sophomore year, Nolan's freshman year, when that was the 1 year that Coach Dawkins was here. I remember him and Nolan, the countless hours they spent in his office watching film, talking about all the things Nolan had to do better. He had to walk faster. He had to tuck more. He had to run back on defense. He had to rebound. He had to do all these things.
That's
spent
it?
A lot of time. No, there's – no, yeah. There's – I could go on and on,
You're really
going
to bring this up. You had to bring up these tough days.
There was a lot of moments where Nolan grew up from Coach Dawkins, right?
I did. No, I definitely grew up. And that 1 year he was here, I grew up. There were many days I was almost at this door about to leave the court and not here. Young fella, where you going, young fella? after a three-hour practice, I'm looking back like, huh? I'm about to go shower with the rest of the team. Like, and he'd be like, nah, we're not done.
Yeah, we got some work to get in.
Jordan Davidson, fresh, zigzags, let's go.
Right.
So we put in a lot of time.
We didn't have the catapults back then. We couldn't track what we were doing.
I mean, before we got a little something planned here for the end. Before we get to that, of course, you're the people's champ. All the philanthropy you've done, I mean, already you're so young, but I feel like it's starting to become your legacy and was when you played here at Duke and now even so much more in the community. Just give us a flavor of everything you got your toes in right now all throughout the community.
So right now I'm currently a member on the board at the Emily K Center. So I take place in meetings over there and trying to, you know, get a lot of the inner city kids over to the Emily K Center and help them get to college. So talking to a lot of friends that I've made over the years being here in Durham and making sure we get a lot more young men and women over to that center because that center is doing great work here in the Durham community. And then second still, the ambassador for Teen Cancer America, which is something that's been very dear to my heart for the last 3 years now and just continue to, you know, raise awareness for teens with cancer and getting over to the hospital as often as I can to visit the teens battling cancer. You know, so It's been an honor and, you know, just to continue to do work in this community that I love. Been here for a long time and just, you know, want to do God's work.
Where does that come from? I mean, a lot of people don't realize until later in life that it's time to give back. I mean, I know you lost your father tragically at a young age. I don't know if that's a piece of it or not, but where did that come from for you?
That's really it. When growing up, I always heard about my dad, heard stories about my dad, and those stories were, your dad always gave back. Your dad was the nicest guy. Your dad did this for kids. Your dad did this for me. He would give his shirt off his back to a homeless man. And as an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, I hear these stories constantly. And I think that just grew in me. It just grew in me. And that's something that I just want to do, you know, bigger than basketball. You know, obviously I want to coach basketball and help young men, you know, reach their dreams of, you know, the NBA and just being good people. But that's off the court, and that stuff just goes a lot further than this game of basketball, and that's something I just want to do.
It's incredible.
Well, before we let you go, but do you want to do one more thing? I know you guys are competitive because I see you guys out there in the games with the managers. And Duke MBB Stats is becoming a rising star on the program, and this one's for pride. No prize on the line, but wanted to see how you guys stack up with a little bit of history as we welcome in the czar of all things statistics here for the Blue Devils, Mike DeGeorge. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Good
Mike,
to be back.
To see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you guys too.
So, Mike,
I'm always a little nervous when I see you come by, though. So,
well, that's not good.
Just so you know, Shire knew this was coming. He didn't know it was coming at him.
All right, so we got five questions for you. A couple revolving around the 09-10 team, but a couple just general Duke questions. So we'll start out maybe a relatively easy question. So we want to go I'll ask them both and see who gets it right. Is that how we're going to do? And yeah, best
you
of
can
five.
Alternate who gets to answer okay. first. However you want to do it.
All right. So we'll go Nolan first because Nolan's a guest, so he gets the first crack at the.
If one of us misses, do we get a chance to?
Sure. Oh,
okay.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Like Family Feud style.
So we'll go true or false. First question.
By the way, before we get started.
Oh.
Coach Smith looks much more comfortable than Coach Shire right now. I just want to go with that right off the top.
I can't have my guest, you know, beat me right away. Especially we just talked about history the other day. So, anyway.
All right, so true or false? John Shire had the best three-point field goal percentage in the 09-10 season. Now, that doesn't count Miles Plumlee's one for one.
Okay.
True or false?
True.
It's false.
It's false. Do you know who it is?
Kyle.
Yep.
It was close, Singler. Though.
It was very close. Yeah. Singler, 399. You were 392, Nolan, and Shire was 383
yep.
percentage.
Yep.
Five total questions. Lots of time to
yep.
bounce.
Yeah, a lot of time.
He shot the most.
Yeah.
I didn't shoot those
just remember it going up over and over again.
God dang it.
Yeah.
In the half.
Fifth all-time in most three-point attempts that season was Shire.
Wow.
Because if he wasn't here, I'd have said false.
Yeah.
Because he's here, no, I wanted to be nice. I'm like,
get him up, right?
Like, look at him like,
I'm in the shot clock, so no.
All right, so now John gets the next crack at this one.
Yep.
Which Duke team set the ACC record for most block shots in a season?
Oh, so we're not going 2009, 2010.
I said a couple would be 09-10.
Got it.
Just general.
2018-19.
John's right. Last year's team. Last year's team was the ACC record holder for most block shots.
What score is you, mate?
We're going to get to that in a little bit.
If I agree, would I got a point?
Well, you got to go first that time, so he gets the point. Okay. It's early, though. It's
yep.
only two.
Okay, yep.
It's only two.
So now Nolan gets the first crack at it.
Yes. All right. In the 09-10 season, Nolan, how many weeks was Duke ranked number one that season?
Can I get a multiple choice?
No.
That seems fair.
Okay.
Yes.
12, 5, 1, or 0?
5.
Can I answer?
You don't get the point, but yeah, you okay. can answer.
0.
We weren't number one at all?
Nope.
Went the whole year to not get to number one
yep.
in 09-10. So, yeah, if you go by the AP poll, which comes up before the tournament final poll, even at that point.
We were not.
Duke didn't finish number one. Yeah, crazy.
I knew we were disrespected all year, but Jesus,
right?
We were talk about playing with a chip on your shoulder.
Right. Okay.
Okay. We're going to
Shire's on deck.
Yep. Mm-hmm. In the Coach K era, who holds the record for most rebounds in a game? And we have multiple choice.
Okay.
Bagley, Miles Plumlee, Ja, or Sheldon Williams?
Marvin Bagley.
Miles Plumlee.
Wow.
Had 22 against Maryland.
Wait, not Mason? Mason. That's what I was going to say originally.
Hold on. Hold on.
Fact check.
Yo, I was literally going to say Mason. And then the multiple choice messed me up.
Let's
Mason. Is it Miles? All right, we can find it real quick.
No, Miles.
Oh, my God.
Baltimore Sun. Terp stump, 73-55 loss at Duke.
What year?
2012.
February 11th?
2-11-12, yeah.
February 11th, 2012.
Unbelievable.
We wore those gray jerseys, too.
Oh, my God.
That game.
All right. What scores you made? Do we know?
You know, sometimes in life it's just better to, like, enjoy the moment.
Let's just enjoy this game.
All right, Nolan's
please.
Up. Nolan's up.
Last question. Which Duke player has won more games than any player in Duke history?
Christian Laettner.
Shane Battier.
Shane?
Shane.
How? Did Christian go to four Final yes. Fours? Was it like one game off?
Yes.
Battier won.
Game winner.
Christian's fourth on that list, believe it or not. Battier won 131. Singler won 125.
I was going to guess Kyle.
Emile won 124. Wow. Duhon won 23. Laettner 122. And Nolan Smith 121.
I think being out 8 games for the concussion.
Man, right? Yo, I'd have been up there. Oh, man. Bonus, 2011 ACC Player of the Year. No one said. Give me 1 point. Give me 1 point.
We're going to have to get him back on to redeem himself. Yeah.
I'm going to come back at the end just for a trivia.
We need to have a specific Nolan Smith trivia
session. Yeah, I think that he's much better at trivia about himself than he is.
So. Okay, we'll hit that. After we talked about how selfless our team was, Nolan Smith trivia.
Coach, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, no.
I feel like you're getting too good at the trivia stuff. I mean, we have a nice guest come in and visit with us, and you just clean house.
You know, I think we should have Mike on more often. Duke MBB is a great addition to the Duke Basketball Podcast.
You were holding back there, too. You knew the Battier thing right away.
I did. I was hoping he would go in a different direction, and he did. So, I know, look, history, I majored in history, so that's what I do. But fortunate to get Nolan today. We'll have him back on. We'll do it again.
Well, a key tilt this weekend in the ACC is going to be in Cameron Indoor Stadium. Duke and Louisville, both teams ranked in the top 15 of the country. College Game Day is kicking off their season this Saturday from Cameron Indoor Stadium. The game is at 6 o'clock. I know for you guys it's the next game up in a long ACC season, but in the era of social media, and obviously the kids are not naive and the student body is going to be out in force for this one. How do you approach as a coaching staff the quote-unquote big game?
We don't, because every game is a big game. It's truly what we say. And Coach talks about all the time, you know, at Clemson, home versus Louisville, at home versus Wake Forest last Saturday. Every game is worth one win. And now we know Louisville is a great team. We know they've been on a roll here as of late. They've won some tough games on the road, and they're going to be ready for us. So we need to make sure we match that. And look, we're coming off a loss. So I think our guys will be ready, and we need to have two great days of preparation. But frankly, we truly treat every game like it's a big game.
And a quick thought on Louisville. It's easy to see why they're 14-3. You look down the list, everybody's back. I mean, Jordan Wara, Stephen Enoch, Dwayne Sutton, Ryan McMahon, Malik Williams, Darius Perry. These are all guys that the Blue Devils saw last year at Louisville. But Jordan Wara really is their go-to guy.
Yeah, he's been terrific all season, and he's taken a big jump from his freshman to sophomore year, and then now this past year, even a bigger jump. So we know he's a terrific player. He's a guy you need to have him be accounted for anytime he's on the floor. He can really shoot. He goes to offensive boards. He's got great size. So you need to have length on him and really do the best you can. When you're facing a great scorer, you're not going to just have him score 0 points. But if you can make him a high-volume scorer, that's what we would like to do.
Well, before we get out of here, let's get a three-point shot up as we do every week. Come at it from a different angle now. First topic I wanted to get into, when you were going through your freshman season, a lot of these guys are young on this year's group, but what do you think is the hardest thing to learn as a freshman?
You know, I would say, Shoemate, you have to learn how to not get too high and not get too low. You know, when you're a freshman, you have a big game and, you know, score a lot of points and you play great and you have a tendency to live in that moment for a little longer than you probably should. And then, you know, same thing, you play poorly and, you know, let's say it's a Clemson game and we lose. You need to move past it right away. Like, the season's too long. Teams are too good to stay in that and to, like I said, to get too high or too low. So I think if I could give one piece of advice to the freshmen that they would just take, I think it's that, to keep moving on from game to game.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because the second topic I wanted to get into, there's X's and O's things and certainly different ways you can approach it. But what's your biggest takeaway from the game against Clemson, what the guys need to do differently next time out?
Well, I think the mental approach, you know, you have to have the same approach. You talked about big games. You know, every game you have to be mentally prepared, and not only mentally prepared to play, but to compete and to match the other team's intensity. And I think you saw from the beginning, Clemson, they had it more than we did. And so that's a huge lesson to be learned. I think it shows up when you look at the stats. You know, we didn't have, outside of Vernon, we didn't have any offensive rebounds. And we didn't get out in transition as much as we wanted to. And then in the half court, I think the physicality we normally play with, that wasn't quite there. So I think definitely some good lessons to be learned. And we need to do that every single game.
And finally, Coach talked about this and pivot off of what you just said, that, you know, 4 out of 6 on the road to start ACC play, some of it for the holidays, some of it afterwards. Maybe not physically fatigued, but he said it can mentally fatigue the team because you're coming and going all the time. For the next almost 3 weeks, Duke is going to be here in Durham, a 3-game homestand, the longest in ACC play. Obviously, playing at Cameron is an advantage for the team because of the atmosphere and having the crazies behind them. What are the other benefits, though, being at home for such a long stretch, not worrying about having to get on a plane and having to catch up on coursework and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, it's nice when you don't have to get on a plane, but I think on the flip side, you can't assume you're going to win because you're at home. And so that's something I can tell you Coach will definitely emphasize to our guys. And we want to protect our home court. And so, you know, hopefully we get a chance to get a little more rest and get recovery and be in your own bed and get some sleep. But can't assume anything, and you know, you want to take every game one at a time.
You know, coach talks at times about energy cycles, and when you look kind of putting this in the course of the entirety of the season, it seems like a natural break point because of the three-game homestand that's coming up. This next energy cycle, so to speak, with these three consecutive games at home, also a weekend off mixed in there, which is very rare in ACC play. How important is this stretch? You talk about protecting the home floor, but how important is this stretch to set the table for what's to come down the road?
Yeah, well, it's huge. I mean, you know, we're coming off a loss. You get a chance to beat another team who's tied with you in conference. You know, they Louisville only has one loss as well. And we need to get our momentum back here. So it's a big stretch. You know, we have a chance to play Louisville and Miami, and then we get a week break. And like you said, we play at home again. So we need to make sure we don't let up on the gas at all during this time.
All right, Coach, appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you guys next week.